Mini episode 567 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 567. It's a very, very special edition of the FDH Lounge. We are previewing the NBA Finals today with good friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu, managing editor of thatnbalotterypick.com. Before we get into that, a quick personal note about this. I have to say that I, Rick Morris, am, of course, a lifelong Cavs fan, so it's not easy to do this and be objective. It wasn't easy to do our last mini-episode, frankly, on the Republican presidential primaries upcoming and be objective about Rand Paul. But I think for anybody that listened, I think I did a pretty good job on that. And we'll be objective today. And, again, on my prediction for the series and things to look for, I think that will certainly be proof enough. Additionally, for anybody that goes through our catalog, back through past FDH Lounge mini episodes and previous to that, segments from episodes, full-length ones that we did previously, there is, of course, quite a library of content on LeBron James himself and his departure from Cleveland, things that were said at the time. And I want to say, I'm going to go on the record and say I'm not going to do what Scott Robb did, who went on ESPN this week and I think basically more or less blubbered about how sorry he was for everything he said. Personally, I take back nothing. I think my analysis of it was right on at the time. I think what LeBron left behind and the circumstances that led up to that, how distasteful it all was. However, I am a forward-looking guy. He plays for my team. I root for guys who play for my team, and a lot of people in the media have found that to be very, very confusing or hypocritical somehow. If there's anybody that's nominating him for sainthood that was burning his jersey before, then okay, go ahead, call him a hypocrite. But rooting for somebody when they're on your team, rooting against them when they're not on your team, I don't know. It seems pretty consistent to me. I'm guessing, Ben Chu, that you, with your exposure to Cleveland over the years, would probably agree with me on that.
Right, and I think a lot of people would on some some level. And the narrative concept is that it's a complete switch around from where it was 3, 4, even 5 years ago. And I don't think a lot of people in Cleveland expected this to happen. I don't think anyone expected the Cavaliers this season to be in the finals, despite how the Eastern Conference has looked throughout the entire season. But it's a complete, it's going to be an incredible matchup with them in Golden State. So I'm excited to get into this and start talking.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I will say, again, my expectation was to win the East, essentially just because the East was so terrible. And to go back to our last segment on presidential politics, I think there's something of an analogy there in terms of on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton is not exactly an incumbent, nor was she in 2008. But essentially, she's sort of like the closest thing to being an incumbent. And with LeBron being in Cleveland, this was something where I got into a discussion with Rick Bucher some months ago on the show. He didn't agree with me on this, probably one of the rare points where I would be proven to be right and he was wrong. But I said essentially the Cavs have LeBron. That makes them closer to being an incumbent than Chicago or anybody else. I mean, if LeBron had stayed in Miami and Kyrie and Love had gone there with Wade and Bosch leaving, we would still look at Miami as being the incumbent. But I think there's something about the change of laundry in all of this. The fact that LeBron was wearing another team's jersey, I think that kept people from seeing that the minute he came to Cleveland, Ben, they became the team to beat.
Right. And this entire season essentially boiled down to, did LeBron have enough in the tank? And was the team good enough overall to win? And at points, you could say that, again, everyone's going to talk about when they were 19 and 20 midway through the season. But again, we've seen in the NBA there are times when championship teams take a little bit longer to get together. The molding was different. There were a lot of trades during that time, too. So If I'm a Cavaliers fan, I don't really feel that, you know. Do I think we're necessarily favored against Golden State? Probably not, but this series is a lot closer than it looked like at the beginning of the playoffs.
I think so as well. And I think, again, as became clear in the Eastern Conference, where you had Atlanta as a one seed, that, again, as much as I would love to crow on a personal level about the Cavs going 4-0 against the Hawks, ultimately it comes down to whether or not the Hawks really belonged as the number one seed. And, again, in this instance, you look at how they finished the season, 20-12, which would put them somewhere in the ballpark of being an above 500 team. And that looks like closer to where they really were in the long run, more of a 4 seed or a 5 seed that was disguised by a 40-8 start. Golden State, on the other hand, absolutely legit. They did it all season long in the West, 67 wins. Having said that, I think there is a little bit of the same thing, is there not, in terms of how they compare to the Cavs. You pretty much have to take the Cavs post, I'd say, mid-January with the trades, with LeBron's return, everything like that. The Cavs record from that point in time to what Golden State did all year. And when you look at it that way, it's really not that much of a blowout at all.
No, I don't think it is either on paper. At the beginning of the playoffs, I think you would be hard-pressed to find anyone who say that Golden State wasn't the favorite going into this, just because of the way they just absolutely demolished teams this season. But at this trending point, considering what's happened in the situation with Klay Thompson's concussion, with Curry's injury or fall in game four, they have a little bit more questions. And in terms of the matchups overall, I think both teams really just pretty much match up a little bit better. The only major difference in my mind is two things. One is low post scoring. I would favor the Cavaliers there. And in terms of bench depth, I would favor the Golden State Warriors there. And what's really ultimately I think this series is going to come down to is, will Cleveland be able to bully Golden State down low, and will they be able to get second chance opportunities?
Absolutely, and as you and I have discussed previously, I had noted this a long time ago as a Cavs fan. I felt like in the 92 Eastern Conference Finals, the player that was most demoralizing for Cavs fans was Horace Grant, because every time Pippen and Jordan missed, seemingly there was Ho Grant to keep it going again. Tristan Thompson really did the same thing 23 years later to Atlanta, and I think ripped their hearts out and may have been the second most important player out of the Cavs during the series when you look at it that way. So there is that down low kind of presence, and something that's very interesting also too. I think this is the kind of thing that would only come up in a discussion between me and you. I haven't heard this anywhere else, and I don't expect to. You and I were speculating off air about Mozgov v. Bogut down low, and you talk about low post scoring. Mozgov is the kind of guy that can step out and get a mid-range jumper from time to time. He's got some pretty good presence down there, certainly in the rim protection department. Do you expect at all the center versus center matchup, which most people are going to ignore, to somehow potentially be of interest before it's all
said and
done?
I think it's going to be interesting because Bogut, in terms of both of these guys, are relatively good offensive centers. And you noted that Mozgov can hit a mid-range sort of perimeter jumper. Bogut can do that too. But recently, at least based when the Steve Kerr sort of Alvin Gentry sort of mindset, he's doing a lot of his work in the paint, being that enforcer that I think a lot of us thought he could be when he was drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't think we need to necessarily sleep on it, but it's going to be a big deal. If Mozgov can overpower Bogut in the paint, then the series could shift. And like we saw in the Memphis series, Golden State's one biggest weakness is in the paint. I wouldn't say they were a worse rebounding team than Atlanta, but let's note that they weren't in the top 15 in total team rebounds. So at least to me, Golden State, as long as if we saw this in the Memphis series too, that if you can bully around the guards of Thompson and Curry and then Barbosa and force those guys to take bad shots like Memphis did, you'll have a chance to be in any game with Golden State. They don't want to play that. They're the flex offense of the NBA at this point.
Yes, they are. And your point about rebounding certainly makes me feel that much better as a Cavs fan. Health, of course, is going to be paramount. in this series. It's a situation where, with the Cavs, of course, the devastating loss of Kevin Love in the Boston series to that very dirty MMA arm bar that was put on him by Kelly Olynyk. So he's gone. And as I've remarked to some friends in recent days here, I almost tend to forget until timeouts. He always seems to be the first guy to greet the guys coming off the court, and I see him jumping up there in his suit. And Anderson Varejao, I'm like, oh, that's right, we lost Andy back in December. You know, it happened so long ago, you almost tend to forget. That's another significant injury out of the rotation that the Cavs have suffered. And, of course, Kyrie Irving with the ankle injury, and then, of course, causing the other knee-slash-upper leg to be injured in terms of compensating for it. You've got that. As you mentioned, Steph Curry, he came back from that nasty spill that he took in Game 4 to play in Game 5. But the bigger question is going to be Klay Thompson coming out there. And apparently from what we can see of the Golden State doctor's concussion protocol, it seems to be yelling at somebody, hey, get out there, you pansy, because he went back in and seems very ill-advised. So the notion of Kyrie versus Klay, guys that would perhaps be franchise players on other teams, how big is that going to be in terms of the health and effectiveness of these two guys in the series?
It's going to be very interesting because we all know with Thompson's, with a concussion, it's a completely different story. If anyone who's ever suffered a concussion or with the ongoing discussion in the NFL with their concussion policy, and I assume a lot of us do in the media think that the NBA is going to take a look at theirs at some point. But it seems like in terms of health, if Thompson's not on his game, I think Golden State will be okay because they have the depth to at least fulfill that point differential loss if he isn't playing well or can't play in some games. Because we have to know he is day-to-day. And albeit there has been a longer break than usual, concussions, if he gets hit in the head again, they can come right back. So
yes, I
think it's more, at least with Thompson, it's just the way Golden State is built offensively. They are a much better team. But for Cleveland, they really need a healthy Kyrie or at least a 75 to 80% Kyrie that can go out, get rebounds, get assists, and play. Now, because they could probably – Cleveland's not really deep in terms of offensive skill players, but they are deep in terms of guys that can cause, you know, irritants like J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert and Dellavedova. You have those guys on your team who can fill in. But in the NBA Finals, you really need your stars to perform. And guys like Kyrie need to step up in this situation. This is where they always say, this is where you make your legend. So if Kyrie wants to live up to his legend, that's going to be his big thing. Also, I wanted to note on my statistic regarding rebounds for Golden State, I accidentally misspoke. I meant offensive rebounds given – that opposing teams collected against Golden State. I didn't mean total rebounds. I meant offensive rebounds below 25s.
Well, that's a very important metric as well, no question about it.
I think that's going to determine the series. If Cleveland can get those offensive rebounds in multiple choices, multiple chances, they can stay in with Golden State. Teams like Memphis and Chicago this season pretty much showed you the blueprint to how to beat Golden State. You keep the game close within the 10 to 14 point margin. You just make sure the crowd doesn't get into it too crazily, and you'll have a chance in any game. And to be honest, I think a lot of us could even discuss Memphis could have won that series if Tony Allen didn't get injured.
True. You know, and the Cavs have a couple of those shutdown-type defenders to be able to bring to their – you talk about where legends are made in the finals, and as you look at the way that Joe Public looks at this, as opposed to guys like us that are deep into the hoops bubble. Of course, to Main Street America, this is going to be LeBron versus Curry, the present MVP of the league versus the MVP of the last couple of years previous. As you and I have discussed off air, I think the playoffs have kind of shown the difference between MVP of a season. You'd have a hard time taking it away from Curry based on how important he was to Golden State's almost historic kind of regular season and being the best player in the world, somebody who can pick up a team, put it on its shoulders. And the thing with LeBron also is, too, all of the guys around him that are playing so well, so much of that is attributable to him. The whole thing of elevating everybody else's game, which is so rare for a superstar. So How does that play out into this, the fact of, in all likelihood, the Cavs have the best player in the world right now, but Golden State has somebody who is very, very close on his heels, it would seem?
I think the major debate that a lot of people have and a lot of fans are having on social media is that in terms of the outcome, it's virtually LeBron against Golden State's team-oriented offense. Because overall, Cleveland's going to essentially live and die by what LeBron does in this series. Now, there's going to be interesting in terms of how Golden State might play him. We know Ron Adams, the Golden State assistant coach, is going to probably come up with some packages or sets that will force LeBron into double teams and into situations that he doesn't want to be in. And, you know, this is the time, too, that he has to rely on a supporting cast. And there were questions in the past about LeBron relying on a supporting cast, but I think now that has sort of shifted and moved towards, if his supporting cast is good enough, he has a chance to win a title. That's all really that's needed. And with Golden State moving forward, they have the two legitimate, they got the Splash Brothers and Curry and Thompson, but the major thing for them moving forward is, will they get enough offense from everybody else? Because you know the Splash Brothers, if healthy, will get theirs. The question is,
yes,
will they be able to keep up with their frenetic style of offense going through three, you know. Arguably, you would say the New Orleans series, even though it was a sweep, that was a tough series. They had a much tougher road to the finals than Cleveland did.
Oh, no question about it, just by dint of being in the West, first of all, and as you said, with some of the teams they played specifically. Your point about Ron Adams, as deep in the weeds as we are on this, that's also what I love about this show, because that's the kind of thing I like highlighting. That scares me because I hadn't thought about it before, but with his exposure to the whole Tom Thibodeau system, never mind what we saw in the playoffs against Chicago, historically Thibodeau has been very good against LeBron. You go back to when he was in Boston, the 2008 playoffs. So somebody with access to Thibodeau's mind and way of thinking on ways to defend LeBron, that could be problematic for the Cavs. Additionally, too, I want to ask you about this because, again, there are a few people I know personally who watch more basketball than you do with your job at that NBALotteryPick.com. So from having watched all season, I'm hearing some talk now about transition play. It's so important to Golden State. It's also important to the Cavs as well. But it seems like that's a big part of defeating Golden State, is if you can limit them from the fast breaks, the easy points, whatever. Obviously, the Cavs thrive off of that also as well. But what do you think are going to be the mindsets for the coaching staffs in terms of trying to take that away?
Well, very, very simply for Cleveland against Golden State, they want to play a half-court offense. And during the Atlanta series, Charles Barkley astutely pointed out, like, the issue that Atlanta had was that they forced themselves into half-court sets and playing with Cleveland instead of playing more of a fast-paced, up-tempo style. For Golden State, they need to play that style. They can grind it out. There shouldn't be any form of, like, confusion for people. They are a team that have that ability to grind it out and win games when they're not shooting well. And it was shown for entirety of the season. There were games where they would score, you know, they'd have a crappy first half and they would, you know, get to maybe like 40 points. And then in the second half, they'd score 72. They are essentially what I would like to call, they're a flow team. If they're flowing well, then they can't be stopped. And even if they're flowing badly, eventually someone on their team will catch fire. And ultimately, it's going to be interesting because I don't think the stars are really going to necessarily determine this series as much. It's going to be pretty much everybody else. We already know who's going to be able to get there. The real question is who is going to step up for both sides.
Well, and that's excellent anticipation on your part because I want to ask about, believe it or not, some non-rotation players for both teams. But before I do that, let's kind of keep the segue moving in that direction, which is to the non-stars that we have not talked about thus far and the guys that you think can be instrumental. Dele has shockingly become a folk hero in Cleveland through the course of the playoffs. You've asked me off air, is he the next Bernie? He's getting there. He's close to attaining that status in Cleveland right now. J.R. Smith is a folk hero in this town for what he's done. We're only getting the good J.R., it seems like, at this point. Shumpert is a huge favorite for the things that he's done. So the guys who can make a difference there in the Cavs' rotation, you would think, are fairly obvious. For Golden State, you got Harrison Barnes, who's really stepped up again this year. Iguodala, who seems to be performing the exact job that they recruited him for. You got Draymond Green, who's been an absolutely incredible performer for them this year, probably their third best player. So who are the guys that you think might make the biggest impact on both teams from the rotation that we haven't really gotten into thus far?
I mean, some of the guys that, again, and you, as you would know, with the NBA playoffs, the lineup's shoring a little bit. And a lot of those guys we've already mentioned, or you've already mentioned in that previous question. One guy that I want to keep an eye on is Barbosa for Golden State. He's one of those guys that didn't get a lot of run early in the season. And I think a lot of people, including me, thought that he's essentially a playoff acquisition. He's a guy that can change the game and move around and go from, you know, sideline to sideline. This isn't like Brazilian Blur Barbosa from the Phoenix Suns during their 7 seconds or less offense, but this is a guy who can get out in space and make plays. Another guy you have to mention, he never gets mentioned by most of the major media, but if you're on basketball Twitter and a lot of these places, you'll know him. Shaun Livingston has had a spectacular season, considering where he's come from with Brooklyn, and he's just been really good everywhere. And the thing that causes him to be such a mismatch is his size. When you're a 6'7" point guard who can pass and go to the basket, it's pretty much, if you're an opposing coach trying to defend against that, you're not going to be able to, because as long as he can create offensive mismatches, and the thing too with that is that if Livingston can guard some bigger players, then you get more rest for Curry, more rest for Thompson, more rest for Iguodala. So for Golden State, those guys, I think, they will probably be part of the rotation. For Cleveland, I'm not really expecting much from, in terms of already the guys that we kind of already know about. It wouldn't shock me in the series if we saw Joe Harris getting some run, the Cavaliers rookie, just because if a game turns into a track meet, Cleveland's going to need 3-point shooting. And it wouldn't shock me if Blatt decides to unleash him at some point, to at least either get some burner minutes or at least get some spacing on the floor if need be. But I'm pretty sure, and I think you'd agree, Cleveland's rotation is pretty much set at this point. I'm not going to see much of a surprise in comparison to Golden State.
I think it is. And, you know, it's very interesting in terms of Golden State. You mentioned Livingston with a connection to Cleveland. Maurice Spates additionally as well. So many spooky connections to the Cavs from the Warriors team here. Of course, Stephon Curry, a lot of folks like myself, dating myself a little bit here, but you know, in our formative years, rooting for his dad, hitting 3-pointers for the Cavs out at the old Richfield Coliseum, and then his job as the spot shooter off the bench seemed to be taken over by Steve Kerr after that, coach of Golden State. I'll get to a question about Kerr shortly here, but in terms of deeper in the rotation, continuing to follow that thread, and you were starting to go there already, I think, by mentioning Barbosa, because he's one of the names I was going to bring up in terms of that. For the Cavs, you've got James Jones, who at this point more or less is a distant part of the rotation with the injury to Kevin Love. He has sort of stepped in there. But you got him, Mike Miller, who also came over from Miami, the big three, as LeBron has referred to him and those two. You got the Matrix, who we really haven't seen much of thus far. You got, as you said, Joe Harris, the shooting guard, coming off the bench. We saw him in garbage time at the end of the Atlanta series. Kendrick Perkins, who hasn't really been heard from very much. Blatt seems to have gone with a kind of smaller rotation, much more compact, like you're thinking. How much does he trust these guys, and how much does Steve Kerr trust some of the guys outside of his rotation, do you think?
I think it's really apples and oranges at this point. But if you have to guess, there's no question in my mind that Steve Kerr is completely confident in his rotations. He's not worried about that. That's what makes Golden State so dangerous. It's not necessarily the fact that their team is deep, the fact that they have multiple guys who can play multiple positions who have offensive capabilities. For Cleveland, you have got that. If I'm Blatt, I trust, because I have a lot of guys with playoff experience on my team. But a lot of those guys who have playoff experiences are getting old, or they're reaching their end of their veteran, you know, period in the NBA. So if I'm Blatt, I'm going to essentially, most likely, if I'm him, I'm running with what I did in the Atlanta series. Outside of maybe sprinkling in some Joe Harris, I don't really see any reason for him to change his rotations, unless, you know, obviously foul trouble or injury.
Exactly. And I'm not exactly going to claim that this is a any kind of predictor of what's going to happen in the series, but that we hear all the time of computer simulations of series. I took it upon myself to play the entire series on NBA Live 96 using prototype players from the time, i.e. Tim Hardaway as Steph Curry, et cetera. Cavs won in four straight, and Sean Marion actually played a fairly significant role for the Cavs. I don't expect that to repeat itself in real life here, either the 4-0 or Sean Marion playing any kind of a part. But as we bring it around to the coaches, we've been talking a little bit about Steve Kerr already, and David Blatt, that's one more connection between Cleveland and Golden State. David Blatt came very close to being the lead assistant on Steve Kerr's bench this year. This is, I believe, the first time in the NBA Finals that we have two rookie head coaches matching up. Kerr, who, again, should have been Coach of the Year. I think it's pretty clear he should have been that, because when you're the one seed in the West, that should pretty much trump everything else. But David Blatt made his way through a murderer's row of head coaches in the East and doesn't seem to be getting any credit for it. The national media really still seems to love teeing off on him for that, which seems unfair. I mean, he's a work in progress, true, but he's got a very veteran staff with him. He leans a lot on Ty Lue, who everyone seems to think very highly of. So what's going to happen on the benches here? And you mentioned already the role of Ron Adams in playing into things with Steve Kerr and how valuable he's been there. The brain trusts for the two teams, the guys mapping out the X's and O's, how do you see that shaking out?
I think this is one of those very few times where that will where the coaching staffs will be important, but ultimately I don't think we're going to see any, like, for example, we're not going to see any form of, like, you know, the best example I like to use in regards to this is almost regarding the 94 finals when Orlando faced off against Houston. And pretty much Rudy T and his coaching staff were able to neutralize everybody else and let Shaq get his for most of the time. I don't think the coaches are going to play a huge role, but you're going to see certain situations where I think overall we have to say Golden State staff is better. They have at least more than 60 years of coaching experience on that roster, including, if you also need to know too, Jaren Collins, who used to be an NBA veteran, the brother of Jason Collins. So they have a lot of guys, so they have a lot of flexibilities. And I think what we should note is Kerr seemingly went during his Phoenix situation when he was the GM, he learned a lot. It's very clear and apparent to me that he learned from that situation, because there are some times in life you see people don't learn from their situations. It's clear to me that Kerr figured out what he wanted to do, and he surrounded himself with everybody that you essentially needed. In Blatt's case, he has a guy like Tyronn Lue, who was essentially on everyone's coaching radar as their head man for a while, and he has a lot of other notable assistants on his staff. The real question is that I'm not so sure this is one of those situations where we're going to see a sweep or a five-game type series, barring injury or anything catastrophic happening. I don't think the coaches are going to play as much of a part as they have in previous series.
I would agree. I would think that there are any number of factors that are going to be prevalent in terms of the outcome of this thing. And you would think, again, as we start to move here towards predictions, that any number of these factors could come into play. It's a situation where Golden State is regarded as the favorite by the public, and I think justifiably so, without Kevin Love in there. As much of a stretch as some people might think it would be, I would say the Cavs would be at least even, maybe even a slight favorite if they had Kevin Love, the floor spacing, the other things that he could bring to bear, the extra option in there at power forward along with Tristan Thompson. Ultimately, Golden State has home court. To me, that is a decisive factor in my head. That is one of the loudest places to play in the league, even if 99% of the people in that building were not Warriors fans 4 years ago. Regardless, it's loud now. You've basically got Raider fan in there. And I think, quite frankly, I've seen instances in the playoffs thus far where it does a number on the officiating, sometimes on close calls if you want to get out alive. So with all of that being said, Cavs fandom, everything else like that, I think it's very, very, very clear the Cavs can win this series. Put a gun to my head and I'll say Golden State in seven. What say you, Ben?
This is insanely difficult, because if you looked before the season, I was a huge Warriors fan and I was a huge focal on their team. And just looking overall at the beginning of the playoffs, I would tell you, no question, Golden State wins in five. But the way Cleveland has progressed during the year, and one thing we have to note is that they did face twice during the season Cleveland won one, and then they lost the other one, but that was during LeBron's stretch run where he didn't play. So right now, in terms of – and we also – one thing we have to factor in, too, is that if Golden State was healthy, I would very apparently pick Golden State, no question, because it would be a thing. But they're banged up. We don't know if Space is going to be able to play much this series. We don't know what Curry's mental health is. We don't know what Thompson's health is in terms of his concussions. And it almost seems like this is one of those trap situations where the logic is dictating that Golden State should win this series just because of the way they've performed this entire season. But I'm going to go out on a limb because they always in matchups like this, in terms of big name stars against a collective team, more often than not, the big name star wins. So I'm going to say Cavs in seven. I think a lot of us would be shocked if a sweep happens or anything along those lines. But the way Cleveland has seemingly come together and how Golden State, because let's be honest, they've played in a fantastic playoff spirit. I've seen more Golden State deficiencies than I've seen Cleveland deficiencies at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
but
I would love
really,
to believe
like
that.
I we talked to before. It's like paper thin, in my opinion. It's like 51% to 49%. It could go either way.
I think it's that close also. I really agree with that, and I think for the people who think that Golden State is a sizable favorite, I think that's really a large amount of oversimplification because, again, you have to look at where they are now. And, yes, I mean, it's possible that, again, this charmed season that Golden State is having, when you talk about the health of the Splash Brothers right now, including their mental health coming off of these injuries, that they may come to wish that they'd had a little bit more adversity then and a little bit less now because this is not a good time to be dealing with it. The Cavs have been having to deal with adversity, first of all, since the Anderson Varejao injury, but more recently the Kevin Love injury, Kyrie playing on about 60% of one leg at the beginning of the Atlanta series, but fortunately looking much, much better at the end of it and giving a sense that, yes, he probably can be at least 75 or 80% of himself, which could be enough to keep the Cavs in it, maybe tip it to them. But it's going to be, I think, the most exciting NBA Finals in many, many, many years, not just saying it because my team is in there, but as I knew it would be, Ben, a tremendous and educational conversation. Thank you so much, as always. And, again, go ahead and plug everything you got going on, that NBALotteryPick.com.
No, you guys feel free. Always look for the best humor and highlights on the web. Go to that NBALotteryPick.com. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. The at is essentially that NBA pick. And don't forget, follow us on Facebook. You know, we always try to keep everything updated out there. And one other note I wanted to period on this series is that if we can live in a world where J.R. Smith could win Finals MVP, I'm not sure if the world's going to be able to take it. We might cease to exist if J.R. Smith wins the Finals MVP.
I said to a friend of mine last week from New York who was in town to watch a baseball game, I said to him, you know, J.R. Smith's a folk hero in this town right now. And the constipated look that he gave me is one of the things that makes life worth living. We don't know or care in this town. Well, there are some of us who know, but nobody cares what happened elsewhere. Bad J.R. All we know is we're getting good J.R. By the way, another thing about your site as well, I want to highlight this. Of course, you being at the forefront right now of technological breakthroughs. And for those who are following you on Twitter, at that NBA pick, the ability to take part in some Periscope discussions, which I know will be ongoing through the NBA Finals.
Oh, yeah, of course. And even in the offseason, because everyone knows when the timing slows down and we get to the draft and summer league, there's always people always have questions. And I always tell people I want to hear from the fans and I want to hear from people because I would rather – give you guys what you want, then do, to give you essentially what you don't want. So ultimately, I'm always around and I'm always happy to answer questions or any sort of, things that y'all want to talk about. That's what I like to think at the end of the day. Even if it's all Lakers questions, that's fine. I'll answer anything you guys need to ask.
Everything you do want, nothing you don't want. Of course, summing up that NBALotteryPick.com. In a nutshell, the managing editor, Ben Chu, and FDH Lounge dignitary, thank you so much, my friend, as always, for a great discussion. Go Cavs.
Go Cavs. All right, wait, no, Ben. I have to say go Sonics, man. My bad. Go Sonics.
Yeah, that's your natural constituency. That's right.
Right, yeah.
Again, so. Thank you, Ben, for being a part of this. Thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to FBH Lounge, mini episode number 567.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.